All right. Whatever you just did, I hope. I do not want to know. But anyway, so where was I? So yeah, if you want to share state between Spark applications, so you need to offload data to an external source, maybe HDFS, and then reload it back. Not a very convenient way of doing it. Using a disk storage or any other kind of storage requires extra conversions from RDDs to some other format and then back to RDDs. Plus, there are no event notifications, no change notifications. So it's not a real convenient way of doing it. And what Ignite provides and what we are going to be talking about today is shared RDDs in memory. So, and by sharing RDDs in memory, you can actually, first of all, you get to use native Spark API and native Spark transformations. The RDDs now are going to be wrapping Ignite caches. I'll be talking about that as well. And by virtue of that, they'll be providing a view on the shared data that is in memory, because Ignite caches data in memory, and it caches it local to your processing. So wherever the data is being processed, you'll be having the same data will be cached on that node. So there's no real loading or offloading. There's just a wrapper, RDD wrapper, that allows you to share state. And also, as a side effect, Ignite also provides a very nice boost for Spark SQL. Spark doesn't do any indexing, as you might all know. It doesn't index your data for SQL queries. So the demo I would have shown would actually demonstrate that some Spark queries, whenever you do distributed joins, they always require full scan. And whenever you do full scan, it can take, on a join, maybe 5 gigabyte table with another 5 gigabyte table, basically something that can fit on a MacBook Pro laptop. That join may take up to 30 seconds, maybe 40 seconds, maybe a minute. And if you index it, it takes milliseconds. So you can get a very cool boost by indexing data that can be queried in Spark. And here's how we are actually offering to do it. So Ignite Data Grid, Ignite has a Data Grid product. By the way, how many of you are familiar with the Data Grid concept? So let me actually start there. A Data Grid is a distributed cache with transactions and with querying capabilities. How many of you are familiar with a distributed cache? All right, so if you take a distributed cache, you partition your data in the cluster, you collectively, across the whole cluster, you're caching the whole data set, and distributed key value store with strong transactional and querying capabilities. And because it's a key value store, it's very good with tuples. So it's actually fits very nicely into actually Spark way of doing things. And it's a very well-proven technology. I mean, Ignite Data Grid has been around for quite a while, and some very large projects are running on it. So it's been beaten up in production for quite some time. So it's pretty stable, and the components that are allowing us to share state in Spark are going to be our Ignite RDD and Ignite file system. Ignite actually comes with a distributed file system. I'll talk about that as well. But both of those features are based on Ignite Data Grid. And just by virtue of that, they already inherit all the fault tolerance, all the scalability of the distributed data grid provided by Ignite. The data can be stored in on-heap and off-heap, and as I have mentioned, we accelerate SQL very nicely. Data grid actually is, first and foremost, it's a key value store, but it also allows you, provides a very nice capability to index data. So once you index data, the queries get really fast. So the SQL gets a lot faster once you do it with data grid. The loading time is a little slower because we need to index data as we load it. But once the loading has happened, the queries take literally milliseconds. So you jump from 30 seconds from watching that wheel spin for 30 seconds to milliseconds, instantaneous result time. So what is Apache Ignite? I'm going to have a few overview slides on what Apache Ignite is and some functionality that it provides, just so you will get some context, even outside of Spark, of how things work underneath all this mechanics of the in-memory data fabric. So the main point on this picture is that the databases are underneath and the applications are above. So Ignite slides in between your application and your data. And your database, and it provides a nice data acceleration layer. So if you have a performance problem or if you have a scalability problem, then Ignite is probably a good product to try to solve it. What Ignite mainly is a collection of distributed components. All of these components are independent from each other, but one of the advantages here is that they're all very well integrated with each other. So some of the components include data grid, clustering, compute grid, streaming, Hadoop acceleration, and Spark integration, etc. So all these components are available within the fabric. Whenever using Ignite, you never really use all of these components. Unless you have been using it for a very long time, you probably don't have a use case for all of these components. But generally, if you have a use case for one component, maybe data caching or maybe compute, you can get started. And then as you progress, you actually will start using other components because the API is the same, the feel is the same, and you get to take advantage of more and more features available within Ignite. Data grid is probably one of the most of the biggest component within Ignite, which has to do with distributing data. There's also compute grid, streaming, etc. So the product is actually fairly simple to install and run. You just download it and zip it and execute a shell script called ignite.sh. And once you run it, all the nodes will automatically discover each other, and now you have a cluster. Then you can deploy code in it and start executing stuff in parallel and caching data in parallel. Very well-organized project from a dependency standpoint. Everything is Mavenized. So you never have to import some dependencies you do not want. Ignite comes with one mandatory dependency, which is ignite-core.jar, and everything else can be brought in on a la carte basis. So if you want Spring for configuration, you bring Spring. Log4j for logging, you bring Log4j. You want to use Camel for messaging, you bring Camel dependency, etc. So all these dependencies come on a la carte basis. And finally, I'll mention that there are no hardware requirements. We have Ignite running on huge clusters of hundreds and thousands of nodes with lots of RAM available to maybe smaller clusters with maybe a few nodes, maybe 2, 3, 10 nodes with much less RAM available. Essentially, from our standpoint, we don't care. We will use all the memory and all the resources you make available to us. The more RAM you provide, the more data we can cache. Ideally, I would love to cache everything, all of the user's data. Not always possible, but the more you cache, the more performance you get. These are some of the components. Just another view on Ignite, Ignite components. This is not an exhaustive list, but definitely some main components are listed here. As I mentioned, Data Grid is our biggest component, but there's also Compute Grid, Service Grid, Streaming, etc. So Data Grid is responsible for caching, distributed caching, and transacting and querying the data. Compute Grid actually is responsible for computing on that data in parallel. So the real useful feature is the integration between these components. So whenever you send a computation to the grid, you want to send it exactly to the node where the data resides. And that's exactly the integration provided by these two components. Ignite will automatically route all the computations to the nodes where the data is cached on the cluster. There's also a service grid which can provide available fault-tolerant services within cluster. The main use case here would be a singleton use case. If you ever had to deploy a service and ensure that there's only one instance of that service available within your cluster, Service Grid actually provides it right out of the box. It's called Cluster Singleton. So if a service will be deployed on one node, one of the nodes in the cluster, if that node crashes, it will automatically pop up on another node. However, singleton is just one case. We don't actually care how many service instances you like. So you can have one for singleton, you can have 5, 10. How many ever services you configure, instances of service you configure, that's the amount of services will be deployed. Streaming is a very nice way to load and process data also as it comes in into Ignite Data Fabric. And probably one more component I'll mention is the file system. Ignite provides a distributed file system, yet another way to look at your data. So you can look at it from a data grid standpoint, you can look at it using standard SQL, and you can also structure your data using a file system. So Ignite provides a distributed Hadoop-compliant file system, also based on top of data grid. So you can actually plug it in without any changes in code into any Hadoop deployment or any Spark deployment that uses HDFS. You can plug in Ignite file system either on top of HDFS or instead of HDFS, and it should just work. And the file system is in memory, so it should make things a lot faster. So let's talk about data grid a little bit. How many of you actually have heard about JCache, JSR 107 standard? So essentially, it's a very nice API to work with cache data. So if you are familiar with Java util concurrent map API, then JCache will be pretty similar. It actually provides a hash map-like view onto your distributed cache. So, and Ignite implements JCache standard, so it's actually, if you have had some experience of using JCache before, or if you just learned the spec, you'll feel right at home at Ignite. But essentially what JCache does, it provides a view on a key, it's a key value API for your data. So if you think, as I mentioned, a data grid is a distributed hash map. So every node, there's a notion in a data grid of data ownership. Every node in the data grid owns a piece of the data. Collectively across all the nodes, you get your whole data set. There are various ways, different ways of caching data, different ways of storing data, but essentially what it does is provide a distributed hash map view with a key value API. However, key value API is just one way to look at the data. Ignite also provides, on top of JCache, will also provide transactions. Not very important for Spark integration, but just an FYI, if you need to use transactions, Ignite actually has that available. One of the strongest SQL compatibilities within in-memory products. Ignite provide an ANSI 99 SQL, ANSI 99 compatible SQL querying capability, so you can actually run any type of SQL on top of an Ignite, in-memory indexing, and et cetera. And lastly, I'll mention that if you have a database, right? So if whether you use a Spark or not, actually, if you don't use a Spark and you simply want to cache your data from your database, Ignite will automatically integrate with pretty much any database out there. Will automatically read the schema, generate the domain model, and provide ways of reading through and writing to the database. So whenever data changes in memory, it automatically propagates into the database. So all the changes will be automatically propagated in and out. Whenever you're reading something from memory and it's not there, it will be automatically loaded from a database and cached in memory. If you're using transactions, database will become part of your transaction. If database read or write failed, the in-memory piece will also fail, and transaction will either commit as one unit or fail as one unit. Any questions on this? All right. So this picture actually shows how Ignite distributes and caches data. There are two different ways of how you can distribute data in memory. One is partitioned, and another one is replicated. So partition actually, the Thank you, I appreciate it. So partition is actually the way where I was talking about data ownership. Every node owns its own piece of data. So in this diagram, we actually have a very simplistic view on the data. We have four keys, A, B, C, D, and every node owns one of those keys, A, B, C, and D. Note for redundancy, we also can configure backups. So every node can actually store backups. However, if you look here, there is no concept of a backup node, right? There is a concept of a backup key. So every node can store backups for some other for the keys that are stored on some other nodes, but there's no designated node serving as a backup of some other node. All the keys are distributed evenly within the cluster, and all the backups are also distributed for all the backups for those keys are also distributed evenly within this cluster. So, for example, on this diagram, JVM1 actually is a backup for key D. JVM2 is a backup for key A, which is stored on JVM1, etc. So the backups are evenly distributed. The main reason for this type of distribution is that if one node crashes and a backup becomes now the primary node, in that scenario, the load is still going to be equally distributed within the cluster, because if one node crashes, the backups for that node were already equally distributed within that cluster, so all the load will be pretty even. And then a new backup, of course, will be selected after that. So if the data access is pretty simple, if you access any key, actually there are two ways. You can access locally and, I have this thing. If you access locally or remotely, the access is pretty intuitive. If the key is in memory, actually on a remote side, we have a concept of a near cache. So if the data is not so whenever a client accesses the data, it can also opt, select to cache data locally on the client side. So if the data is cached on the client side, it will be returned immediately. If not, it will go directly to the server where the data is. So for example, if we're accessing key A, we're checking local cache here, it's not there. We go to JVM1, fetch it, cache it here, and return. Key B is already cached, so we'll return it immediately. So that's for partition caches. Replicated caches actually have a little bit of a different way of storing data. Think about it as a partition cache where all other nodes are backups. So essentially, in a replicated cache, every node stores all the keys. You can cache much less data in a replicated cache because now you can only cache as much data as fits only in one node. Here we can cache as much data as fits across all nodes. Here only we're limited by only whatever can fit in one node. And we replicate that across all the servers. So the main difference here, of course, in the ways you scale, in the ways you access data. If you use partition cache, then writes are very cheap. Whenever you're doing an update, you basically, let's say if we need to update key A, we need to update this copy, primary copy, and this copy, backup copy, JVM1 and JVM2. So to update key A in this scenario, we need to make two network trips. If you have four nodes in the cluster, it's two network trips. If you have 1,000 nodes in the cluster, it's still two network trips. So the number of network trips actually is constant and does not depend on the amount of nodes in the cluster. So this approach scales very well, very, very good for writes, very good for reads. Reads are sometimes you'll get a miss because reads are not available on every server. You actually have to go to the server to get the data. But overall, this approach scales very well. In a replicated scenario, updates are very expensive because we now need to update all the servers. So if you have 10 nodes in the cluster, we make 10 network trips. 1,000 nodes in the cluster, we make 1,000 network trips. So this approach is not scalable for updates. You generally do not store data that grows or data that is frequently updated in a replicated cache. So the data you store there is usually read-only, read-mostly, some configuration data, the reference data, etc. Data that gets accessed a lot but does not get updated a lot. Cool thing here is that you can transact between these caches together, and you can query between this type of caches. So a typical deployment may include maybe 20, 30 partition caches, maybe 10, 15 replicated caches, and they all can work together within the same API. This is just a configuration property. This is not an API change. All these caches have the same API. So another point I want to focus on in Ignite is the off-heap storage. I know Spark also has off-heap. Generally, how many of you have ever run into garbage collection problems in Java? I'm sure everybody. But what off-heap does is allows us to overcome this challenge. We do not, if you store data off-heap, you do not run into any kind of garbage collection issues. And for us, managing data in memory, whenever we store data in off-heap, we manage it ourselves. But our management is much simpler than JVM management, because for us to put data in cache is a put call, so we know exactly when data is put in cache, and to remove it is a remove call, so we actually know exactly when it's removed from cache. So data management is much simpler, and that allows us to implement a very efficient and performant off-heap storage. Key point here is that data is the data is stored off-heap, but indexes are also stored off-heap, because indexes may occupy maybe 20-30% of your data. So if you have 100 or 200 gigabytes of data, indexes may easily occupy 30 to 50 gigabytes. So they also are prone to garbage collection issues, so it's important that indexes are also stored off-heap. And I just want to mention, in Ignite 2.0, we are re-architecting our memory format, the way we store data in memory. So we are going to move into slab allocation and page memory approach. Right now, it's a key value approach. So essentially, we allocate key value slots every time you create or work with a key value pair in memory. But we're actually going to be moving to a page approach, where in memory is just a large byte array split into multiple pages, and every page can have an X amount of key value pairs in it. Allows us to efficiently move pages in and out of memory, and also will allow us going forward to map this structure directly onto disk and actually integrate with any kind of disk storage we may wish to add down the road. As I mentioned, Ignite supports SQL, it's ANSI 99 compatible. One of the things here is always consistent, always fault tolerant. All the indexes are in memory. However, right now we store everything that starts with the word select. So if you look at a data grid, data grids usually support some query language. In Ignite, it's, the query language is SQL. You can actually connect to Ignite using JDBC or ODBC connectivity. And from a SQL standpoint, you can still do transactions, and the data will always remain consistent regardless of the failures in the cluster. One of the main features here is that we support distributed joins. You can actually have data distributed within the cluster, and I actually will show you an example where data is distributed within a cluster, and you can join between two data sets together just using standard SQL. And in Ignite 2.0, 1.8 and 2.0, 1.8 is actually being voted right now on the dev list. We will be also adding insert, update, deletes calls, so you will also be getting DML calls, and shortly after, create, alter, drop, so schema alteration calls. Once we have that, you'll be able to talk to Ignite using key value API, or simply just SQL without any Java coding whatsoever. So pretty cool additions on the roadmap. Just an example of how a query will look. Select org name, average salary, max, mean salary from person, organization. So there's a join here. Two tables are could be stored in partitioned or replicated caches. If they're stored in partitioned caches, then for performance reason, you may wish to collocate persons with organizations they work for. If you collocate it properly, then the join will work locally on every node without any kind of data movement across the network. So collocated joins are much faster. If join is not collocated, then we have to actually start moving data sets, which will make it much slower. So typically, 80 to 90% of the queries you're executing should be collocated. And now I want to switch to the Spark and Hadoop integration within Ignite. Ignite actually provides, as some of its components, pretty cool integration with Spark and Hadoop environments. We'll start with Yarn and Mesos. So Ignite natively integrates with either one of these resource managers, either Mesos or Yarn. Some users prefer Yarn, some users prefer Mesos. In my experience, most of the users I worked with were using Mesos, but there were also some Yarn users. But essentially, you can plug in Ignite into any resource manager that you're already using for Spark or Hadoop deployment. Now let's talk about actual shared RDDs in Spark. We already have some background on how DataGrid works and how data is distributed in memory. So think about RDD as a wrapper around Ignite cache. So essentially, the data can be partitioned or replicated. It doesn't matter. RDD is just an API that you provide on top of it that allows you to natively use it from within Spark applications. And there are several ways you can deploy DataGrid within Spark application. You can deploy it directly on the worker node. You can deploy it on the executor nodes, actually. Or you can deploy it standalone and have data loaded from another cluster from memory. So any type of these deployments is actually supported. So essentially, Ignite, you can view Ignite as this shared RDD layer for Spark applications. So once you have that, one of the main differences here from standard RDD is that Ignite RDD is mutable. Spark RDDs are generally immutable because you generally do not update data that is processed in Spark. It's a read-only event-based data that gets loaded for processing, it gets processed, some number crunching, and then the data is discarded. In case of Ignite, since it's a distributed cache, and you may want to update state so some other application would see it, the RDD has to be mutable. So that's one of the major differences between Spark RDD and Ignite RDD. Also, there are some additional API methods that Ignite RDD provides that for fast querying data, for saving data in memory that are not available in Spark. And on top of that, as I mentioned, you get faster SQL. DataGrid supports indexing in memory, either on heap or off heap. You index your data, and you can do distributed joins in a matter of milliseconds. So you can actually do hundreds of thousands of queries per second. If you're using standard Spark, maybe you can do 20, 30 queries per second. So the difference is an order of magnitude. Actually, it's a pretty significant difference. So if any of you ever use a Spark application and start using SQL queries and you run into performance issues, try this Ignite integration. We have many users already using it. There are many discussions on user list and dev list about it if you want any kind of background there. There's a lot of documentation for it, so definitely give it a shot. Any questions on this? All right. Does this make sense at all? All right, so here's some a few coding samples of how you would use an RDD from a Spark application. First, you start off from Ignite context. So Spark already provides Spark context. So Spark context is one of the parameters into Ignite context. And the second parameter is Ignite configuration. So Ignite configuration contains information of how you want your cache to be deployed, how many backups you want to have, how many, whether it's partitioned or replicated cache, or what kind of eviction policies, et cetera, et cetera. So all that can be encompassed in Ignite configuration. And it can also be deployed in client. Ignite configuration also will contain either a client or server type of deployment. On the client side, you generally do not cache data, so clients will, or clients have smaller local caches. But if data is not available, they'll go to servers to fetch data. Servers are generally much bigger and can actually do caching themselves. So that is also a control from here. And once you create Ignite RDD, now Ignite context, now you can actually start using Ignite RDD. As I mentioned, Ignite RDD is a wrapper around the cache. So this is how you would actually create an RDD from a cache that is named partitioned. It's actually, you can name a cache anything you like. Here we just chose the name partition. And once you create an RDD, now you can actually update it to store some data in it. You can, just in this coding example, we generate some key value tuples almost randomly, and using Spark context parallelize method to store those key value pairs in the Ignite RDD. Now Ignite RDD is populated with key value pairs, and then you can actually use standard SQL to query that data if you like, or any kind of Spark native construct, native API to work with that data. SQL in Ignite actually looks pretty similar to ANSI 99. The syntax is standard JDBC syntax. So select val from, by the way, class names become tables, columns become fields. In this case, whenever a field is primitive, then the field itself, the value itself is what you use in the query. So we're selecting value from integer because integer is what we've generated here. It's a class name where val is between within certain range. And the result is actually a data frame. So what you get back is a data Spark data frame, and you can process it further within Spark using standard data frame API. So another way to share state in memory within Spark is using a file system. As I mentioned, Ignite provides a distributed in-memory file system that is Hadoop compatible. So again, you're getting the same in-memory shared layer that is built on top of data grid, so it enjoys all the advantages of a data grid. However, file data is unstructured. And so if you store data in a file system, you can't really use SQL to query it. But you can plug it in into your Spark application if it already knows how to work with, for example, let's say HDFS. So you can remove HDFS and plug in in-memory file system. And know that it optionally can sit on top of HDFS, and it can write through to HDFS or read from HDFS. So write through and read through is supported. Whenever data changes in either direction, the in-memory layer is updated. So how do you choose which one to use? How do you choose whether it's a shared RDD or whether it's a shared in-memory file system? Essentially, if you work with objects, if you work with key value pairs, I would definitely recommend using shared RDD. It provides a much richer API, much easier way to access data. On top of that, you can use fast SQL with shared RDDs. However, sometimes you really work with files. It may be log files, PNG files, image files, what's not. And sometimes you need to process those in memory and you need to store those in memory. So whenever you're actually working with files, whenever the data is a file, file system is a much more convenient way to store that data. So it's up to you how you want to slice and dice your data, how you may wish to actually structure the data in memory, whether you want to use RDDs or whether you want to use the file system itself. And lastly, I want to mention that there's another integration in Ignite. On top of file system, there's also integration with in-memory MapReduce. So if you plug both of those in, you simply don't have to change any code in Hadoop. This is actually outside of Spark realm. This is standard Hadoop MapReduce. It's dying. I know it's most of the people are moving to Spark, but there are still a lot of applications out there that are using, let's call it legacy MapReduce code. And if you do have that and you do not want to change the code, but you simply want to make it faster, you simply can replace Hadoop MapReduce with Ignite MapReduce and the Hadoop file system with Ignite file system, and you'll get a very nice acceleration. We had customers and users that actually were able to take a third-party product off the shelf that does that stores data in Hadoop and does searches in Hadoop, plug in our MapReduce and our file system, and get immediately 2-3 times boost. So it can actually jump. The results can come back. For example, if they were coming back in 30 seconds, now they can come back in 10 seconds. So the boost is actually pretty significant. And if you look at this diagram, everything in gray is what Hadoop does, And this blue arrow is what Ignite does. So Hadoop, whenever it executes MapReduce, it starts with a client, then it goes to job tracker, then it goes to task tracker, then it goes to HDFS node, then it goes to disk, then it goes back, and actually there's multiple trips here for between job tracker and task tracker, and then there is also a name node. So there's a lot of chattiness, and but just by looking at the amount of network trips that take place here, you can actually realize Hadoop was never built for performance. It was built for processing large amounts of data. What Hadoop can do is it can take a task that takes an hour, maybe do it in 20 minutes, in 10 minutes. What it cannot do is take a task that takes a minute and do it in 10 seconds or 1 second. So with Ignite, we make that possible. So essentially, by deploying Ignite data nodes, now we actually can bypass. There is no name node in Ignite, so you can, because in DataGrid we know exactly where each key is stored, we can go directly to the data. And we also support in-memory processing, so we don't have to start external process to process data. We process data we work with the data in the same process where the data is stored. So there's literally one pointer, the reference, so the data access is instantaneous. And lastly, I want to mention that if you're familiar with with Apache Zeppelin, Apache Zeppelin provides a very nice way to work with various projects. It's a graphical interface, lets you visualize data that is stored in Spark and many other data storages and caching systems out there. Ignite is one of them, so we integrate with Zeppelin very nicely. I recommend you to try it. And essentially, you can the demo that I was going to show was to load the data into Apache into Spark and load data in Ignite and use Apache Zeppelin to query that data. And the same data set actually would take about 30 seconds in Spark and about 30 milliseconds in Ignite. It would be much faster. So I do recommend you try that. And a little bit on the roadmap. All these features that I was talking about at some point were on roadmap. So non-collocated joins were just recently released in 1.7. Insert, updates, deletes, creates, alters, and drops will be released within the next 2-3 months. And what we're working on right now actively is also better integration with Spark data frames. So you will be. So right now you issue a SQL query and you get a data frame back. But once you got it back, now you're working with it only on that Spark on that Spark executor. With the new data frame support, you'll be able to actually reissue data frame queries, and they will be distributed within the cluster, within Ignite cluster, and actually also provide a very nice performance boost from the indexing standpoint. So that's the roadmap, and that's it. If you have any questions.
DDL operations in memory data grid. Do you have plans to seamlessly reflect whether in underlay database, for instance, in Hadoop, in some Hadoop database in Hive, for instance?
If you store data in HDFS, then you can just automatically migrate it to Ignite file system without any code changes, and then you can run Hive queries on it, etc. So that would be possible. If you load in that data into Ignite data grid from Hadoop, then the format of that data can be anything. So when you need to provide some kind of conversion layer from that into a key value format, into tuple format. So that hardly can be automated. If HDFS were structured, then we could automate it. Oh, by the way, one more thing. If you're using Hive already, then Hive provides JDBC connectivity. We can use JDBC to automatically load schema from Hive and automatically integrate as well. I forgot about that. Any more questions?
Yeah. How can I monitor Ignite cluster? For example, cache utilization or, I don't know, replication progress, something like that.
As a matter of fact, Ignite comes with a very nice monitoring tool, web console, that is you can, the part of Apache Ignite project, you can build it and deploy it yourself. Or, not sure if I can show it from here. You can, GridGain actually provides a hosted version. That's not me, it's, by the way, it's automatic MSN news that gets loaded. GridGain actually, if you go to gridgain.com, there's a management tool here, which is Apache Ignite management tool, but here, I have 1 minute, maybe I can. Here it actually provides a very nice way to configure Ignite, run SQL queries, and monitor Ignite directly from in a SaaS form. So essentially what GridGain does is just deploys a hosted Ignite management console so you can actually manage it directly without installing it. You can install it locally or you can use the hosted environment. So very nice way to configure Ignite. There's a summary here. You can generate code, generate projects, etc. So it's all out there. Check it out. Yes?
It is possible to scale up and scale down running Ignite cluster?
Scale up and scale down. So there's scale up and there's horizontal scaling and there's vertical scaling. So vertical scaling would be increasing or decreasing memory. So essentially you can allocate as much memory as you like. As I mentioned, with support of heap, so that is possible. And horizontal scaling, you can actually add and remove nodes on demand as you as you like. You can actually do it programmatically. There's a node start and node stop API on Ignite itself. So you can, whenever you do that, Ignite will automatically rebalance the data. More questions? All right, thanks for coming.
Okay, thank you very much.